there's a very good plan in place, which we have now in terms of saying what is the risk for tumor lysis syndrome and what you should do. It's in the...
And that's actually in the package insert.
It's in the package insert. Not many of us look at the package insert, but this is the part of the package insert you should look at.
This is an all-time package insert. It was that table. But the thing that was interesting is it really comes down to lymph node size and white count, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So you fall into low-risk category, intermediate risk, and high risk. And irrespective of what risk you are, the important thing to take away from venetoclax is you do this ramp up. You start at that 20 milligram dose and you, over the next 5 weeks, build up the dose to the 400 milligrams. And I should say that more carefully. You build it up over 5 weeks if you don't hit the parameter that says you should stop and go a little bit more slowly. The issue is managing tumor lysis syndrome is to think about it and plan for it. This is not a circumstance you react to. This is one you proactively try to manage these patients with. So you give the patient the 20 milligram dose. You've done their bloods before you start. You look at other features like the renal function, like other biochemical abnormalities that may be there. And you repeat the bloods 8 hours later. And you look to make sure there's no biochemical evidence of tumor lysis syndrome. And what I'm looking for in particular is the potassium going up. And what I like to do is I use the plot feature on the labs. What I'm looking for isn't just whether the potassium's gone out of the normal range, but is there any change at all in terms of, do I have to consider, you know, other features in this? And for a high-risk patient like this, I admit for the first 2 weeks, I actually admit the patient. I'm giving lots of fluids. I gave rispuricase to this particular patient because he was high-risk. And I monitored very carefully, and I repeat the labs the next morning. And you certainly want to make sure you've seen the lab before you even give the next dose of drug to make sure that, you know, it's safe to escalate at all. The feature that we see here is that with the implementation of this more modern tumor lysis syndrome approach, that is, giving the dose escalations, thinking about the risk factors, and thinking about the appropriate measures to prevent tumor lysis syndrome, there haven't been subsequent deaths from tumor lysis syndrome. And in fact, what we're seeing now is even biochemical tumor lysis syndromes becoming, you know, a thing that we don't see as much as we used to. I guess that people have to be aware of, you know, you've got to be cautious about it, and you can't get into being complacent about it. And although we admit this patient for the 20 and 50 milligram dose, you still, at the third and the fourth week, as you're going up in doses, can't be complacent about just sending that patient away. I made sure that I had the 8-hour labs and I looked at them carefully and that I knew that it was safe for him to continue that dose and go off. But I have to say, once I get a patient onto the 400 milligram dose, tumor lysis syndrome isn't something that I have to be concerned about anymore. It's only a feature as I'm dose escalating the patient up to the dose. By the time I get to the 400 milligram dose, the tumor bulk has almost invariably decreased enough that even high-risk patients aren't high-risk anymore, particularly when you're then also adding in rituximab, as we did in Murano.
I was curious that you gave this man rispuricase. I'm not sure how clear the package insert is about that. Now, he was high risk. He had a white count of 60,000, nodes as big as 11 centimeters in the abdomen. And you said he was in the hospital for 2 weeks? Because I thought these patients are in...
No. He's in hospital on the day of the dose escalation. So I'm bringing...
Just the day.
I'm bringing him in, doing labs in the morning, giving him his venetoclax, doing an 8-hour lab and a 24-hour lab. Then I discharged him and then I readmitted him the next week.
Got it. Okay. And it looks like he did great. And now he's just on venetoclax?
Now he's on single agent venetoclax. He's finished his rituximab period. For him, of course, it was particularly attractive. He did not like the concept of continuous therapy for the rest of his life. He personally likes the concept of the 2-year point. Now, one of the big issues that we have here is we don't have a huge number of patients on Murano that have yet been reported that are off that 2-year time point. The New England Journal paper was reassuring and that line still looked pretty steady, but we're going to see at ASH the next update of Murano to see, are those patients going to fall off the curve? And is the concept of a 2-year fixed duration the right thing to do, or should we be doing something different? Lots of clinical trials using this approach use an MRD endpoint to say if you're MRD negative, you can stop, and if you're MRD positive, you continue on therapy. That isn't what Murano did. And they didn't do it that way because the company felt that, you know, MRD monitoring isn't quite ready and in prime time anymore. So would people kind of feel comfortable about using it? But we might, depending on what we see with the Murano data, we might be going back to be talking about, well, there are patients that can stop, but maybe there are other patients that should continue.
So agree or disagree, once you get the patient on venetoclax through the tumor lysis risk, their quality of life and the problems they run into are substantially less than you see with ibrutinib.
Yeah, I think that would be my sense. The toxicity profile of people on venetoclax once they're on that 400 milligram dose is really very tolerable. I will say, I mean, I've had a lot of patients I've treated on clinical trials or the ibrutinib venetoclax combination, where I really was concerned about now you're getting people taking 8 tablets a day and what was the toxicity profile going to be like? And all of those patients also did very well in the combination. But my sense is, yes, the kind of little niggly things that ibrutinib patients start to complain about. They don't complain about it when their lymph nodes are shrinking, but when somebody's been on the drug a little bit longer, little things that persevere can become a real nuisance. And I certainly see less of that on venetoclax than I do on ibrutinib.